You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 3rd of June. The Warriors remind us of what the champions really are. We'll break down that ballgame. Mike Conley, the talk. Ricky Rubio, the quotes. What does it all mean? We'll look at that from a Jazz standpoint. And as we look toward the NBA draft, what's fair to expect with your pick? It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, bringing insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and hopefully making it more fun to be a Jazz season in the offseason and making you more informed. Today's podcast is available on the app Himalaya, as well as Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and the when you get in your car, and Stitcher, and tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Jazz. That's right. Just tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Jazz. You need to use the key phrase. All right, let's get into this one a little bit. I want to start with game two. You know, the Warriors are so skilled with Curry and Durant and Thompson and maybe the greatest collection of talent ever. And I was at a graduation party last night, and one of my buddies said to me, hey, you know, I'm East Coast guy. I live in Salt Lake. I commute to the Bay Area for work. I'm tired of the Warriors. Am I missing something? And I said, yeah, this is really truly one of the great teams we've ever seen. So in that sense, you know, and he's like, well, what about Celtics, Russell Celtics? And I was like, yeah, I mean, different era and definitely in the conversation. And he's like, what about, you know, the Bulls? I was like, well, I think that's like the conversation. I mean, is this Warriors team the greatest team we've ever had? Is the Bulls team the greatest team we've ever had? Showtime gets discussed, and probably Russell Celtics. And so I said, in that sense, you're probably missing something. And at the time, the Warriors were down about 10. I said, no, if they, you know, they lose here and they go on and win 3 of 5 instead of 4 of 5, that's going to have a pretty big impact on where they sit all time. And then we just got reminded. Like, I go back to the Houston Rockets whole thing when they won the heart of a champion. And they'd have these great comebacks and this incredible. It goes to the Bulls. And I think you've got to put the Warriors in this category. That these teams, and even with all the talent they have, and the talent the Warriors have is so magnificent, that we have a tendency, I think, to forget that there is some other element to them of just a resiliency and a heart and a fight. And now at this point, it's an experience, and you can put, you know, you have to do it somewhere along the way to believe in it. And it's what really is the grandest separator. I mean, as we talk about this offseason, you're trying to build this and that. And if Durant, like, they're just on a totally different level than any of the other teams. It's something that, frankly, you know, it's what's missing in the Rockets. They can have all this talent. They don't have whatever this inner spirit, this whatever the signature element of what a champion is on their team. That's, and, you know, Iguodala had this incredible quote last night. Like, I just do this because Steph's the best dude in the world, was basically what he said. It's just an incredible quote, right? Like, it's not because of Draymond. It's because Steph is that great. And I go back to a Locked On NBA show I did with Sam Amick this year, where Sam Amick talked about, you know, Steph holds the whole thing together. This was early in the year, and then Steph's not there when they have the blow up. That was a heart of a champion performance. I mean, they just, from the third quarter blitz, which we'll get into in a second, to when their offense goes cold late, and then that final play where Livingston gets the ball in front of Kawhi and then passes it over to Kawhi or to Iguodala for the three. You know, Livingston and Iguodala are probably a little bit of what we're talking about, these 13, 14-year-old veterans who at one point in their lives were great and now are playing at this level. I'll get into a veteran leadership thing I thought was really interesting on The Jump the other day, but kind of a contrast to that. But a pretty fascinating to watch these guys and that that level. I mean, it's really, there's the play in the Houston series where you really look like Eric Gordon should have intercepted the pass and Livingston gets the ball. It's getting 50-50 balls. It's just, I don't know what it is. I mean, it's an understanding and I think a confidence in moments of stress of what has to happen. The Raptors could not, you know, the thing I've talked about and where I think the Raptors really have a chance in this series is that the Raptors' transition game is better than the Warriors' transition game, and that has kind of been the misknown element of things when you talk about these two teams. What happened last night is the Raptors could not score in the half court. They had one of their worst games of the season in the half court. Now, probably not the same way their offense, whatever, 126 or whatever it was the other day, was not replicable. This is probably not replicable either. Neither team had a good game in transition. Which is worth noting that neither team had a good game at all in transition. And the Warriors got back better defensively in the manner that it wasn't always transition that I thought got them in game one. It was the after they got back in transition, they were so scrambled that the early action of the Raptors got them. And tonight it didn't. The starting move of Cousins was really intelligent. I was surprised. And then the minute I heard it, I totally thought about it, which is that, you know what, without Durant, they just need more firepower, and they just didn't have enough firepower. Like, I kept talking about, well, if you take Clay away, it really hurts them. And so Cousins gives them great firepower. I do think, I'm not sure it's going to work. I didn't think the Raptors dealt with it or attacked it very well at all. And then I thought the coaching move of the night by Steve Kerr was not starting Cousins. It was in the third quarter when Nick Nurse has gone through all of halftime and saying, okay, here they're starting Cousins. This is how we're going to attack him. And being prepared, you know, using halftime in all likelihood to prepare for that. He comes out with Draymond guarding Lowry. He comes out with Clay on Kawhi, Iguodala on Siakam, and hides Steph Curry over on Danny Green. Now, that in and of itself is a huge part of the series, that the Raptors may not have the personnel to be able to go at Steph Curry defensively and make him work on the defensive end. But this just backed the Raptors up. This is where they didn't score for their first 5 minutes. And when they didn't, and they were then playing in the half court in every possession because of the fact that the Warriors were scoring on the other side. And the way you're going to exploit DeMarcus Cousins is beating him in transition. And the fact that the Raptors only had 16% of their possessions in transition, which is low for them last night. They were decent when they got them. They just didn't get very many. Was a major, major part of this game. And then the fact that, you know, Draymond comes out, just gets into Lowry. Gasol commits the two offensive fouls on picks. And they just absolutely stymied the Raptors early. But moreover, whatever their plan was to go after Cousins got negated from that. So it will be interesting to see what the Raptors are able to do with 2 days in game three, trying to go after DeMarcus Cousins and take advantage of his inadequacies in the matchup. A few other just quick notes. Warriors had 34 assists on 38 field goals, and all 22 assists in the second half were field goals were assisted. What's interesting to me about that is if the Jazz approach to playing the Warriors, which has been pretty good, is to make them take unassisted twos. Like the Jazz whole game plan against the Warriors is to try to get their vibe and their ball movement to not be rolling and not be moving the ball in that same fashion. And the Raptors, by trapping and playing a box and one and doing all these other crazy things, are actually allowing the Warriors to have all these assists, and it's just a different approach defensively. I don't necessarily say what's better, but it's a different approach in a lot of ways. All right, so that's my thoughts on game two of the NBA Finals. Veteran leadership, Ricky Rubio's comments in the next segment. Segment three, we'll look at pick expectation for the NBA draft. One other note on the Warriors, they've played 120 playoff games. That's, you know, that creates it as well. 120 playoff games. That's pretty amazing. Today's show is brought to you in part by my friends over at Iron Gate Global Advisors, Spencer Nelson, former Utah State Aggie, and played with the Jazz, on our broadcast team, is now working over at Iron Gate Global Financial, and he tells us about this really interesting company.
I'd like to introduce you to Iron Gate Global Advisors, financial group out of Salt Lake City. I found out about them from Spencer Nelson, former Utah State Aggie, great basketball player. And beyond his jump shot, he's got an MBA. He's worked in private equity. He's got experience working in Wall Street, accounting and financing degrees. And he's now working with Iron Gate Financial. And here's why.
As I evaluated my options and looked at different firms, it became clear to me that the real question I needed to ask was, who would I trust managing my portfolio? And as I got to know Brett and I got to know Brian, I was able to see how they differentiate themselves from so many other wealth management firms and the real value that they create. And it was clear to me that I wanted to work with them.
Brian's a long-term financial expert. Brett, who's been in the business forever, has got an options background. They have a strategy, a direction, and a process. And most importantly, as a small firm, they understand your journey.
If you'd like to find out more about Iron Gate, give Spencer a call at 888-591-0334. That's 888-591-0334 or email him at spencer@igga.com. Anytime we're talking investing, understand that past performance isn't indicative of future results. Also, options may not be for everyone. They have different risks. Make sure you consult a professional before doing anything with them. Do your due diligence. Remember, for Father's Day, grip6.com/lock. Grip6.com/lock has great deals for you on the amazing Grip 6 belts, and also Untuck It, the shirt made for the fit fathers perfectly. Untuck It, NBA is your promo code, 20% off on those if you're looking for your Father's Day gifts. I thought there was an interesting moment on the jump the other day. Richard Jefferson's doing a ton of media. He's really good at it. We all know he would be good at it. And Richard Jefferson was talking about Harrison Barnes. And Harrison Barnes has a player option, I think, for $25 million this year. And Richard Jefferson was like, I told him, take the money. It's $25 million. You take the money and you become a free agent the next year. And what jumped out about this is Richard Jefferson's exactly right. There is one of the biggest myths in the NBA is when you hear people talk about getting veteran leadership on your roster. And the reason it's a myth, now in the case of Andre Iguodala and Sean Livingston, I think it's just veterans in their career. Veteran leadership, what these guys learn by the time they're in their 10th year of their career, frankly, by the time Richard Jefferson got to the Utah Jazz to be Gordon Hayward's mentor, is exactly what Richard Jefferson just told Harrison Barnes. Go get the money. What they've learned, what most veterans have learned by the time they're your veteran leader for your team, is that the teams have almost no loyalty to the players as much as the players have no loyalty to the teams, and that if somebody else comes along or if they get a trade, they're going to move you. And so the message that they're going to send to these players is go get your money. It's about you. When you put a veteran leader with a young player on a roster, and we got to be careful about this with, you know, who we put around Donovan, the message they're going to get in almost all circumstances from a, quote, veteran leader is take care of you. Almost no veteran leader is going to come and be a veteran leader from the aspect of the organization's point of view. Why would they possibly be doing that? By the time they've been in this league for 12 years or 10 years, they've been traded two or three times. They've signed a few free agent deals. They've had somebody screw them. They've learned the nasty secrets of the business, which go both ways. And the chances that they're going to sit there and tell a young player, just do what's right for the organization, be good for the organization, is zero. Veteran leadership is one of the most grandiose myths that's out there in the NBA. And when you, like Richard Jefferson, like revealed it. Like, go get your money, do you, and then become a free agent the next year, regardless of what it means to the Sacramento Kings, your role on the team, or anything else. And you know what? Richard Jefferson is absolutely right. But that's the reality of what veteran leadership is. All right, so The big story locally has been this Spanish translation of Ricky Rubio's comments. And you know what? I don't read Spanish. And I don't know that that's what he said. And from what I've read, I'm not doubting anyone. I think it's a... I think there's probably some smoke to the fire. It seems unlikely that the Jazz told Ricky Rubio that, I mean, he's not priority number one. And so, you know, there seems to be some semantics here. But basically, you know, he's not priority number one. Okay, that's probably accurate, right? I'm not sure that he said that they said he's no longer a priority for them. Like, I think those are two different things. But I think that probably is, you know, is the Jazz first choice to bring back Ricky Rubio? Probably not. And so in that sense, I think it's probably accurate. You know, Rubio, I want to play a leading role on a team with playoff aspirations. It's a great desire. Ricky's a very complicated player. His inability to shoot and his simultaneous, you know, heart and guts and guile are hard to all put into one, and seems to, no matter where he is, create counter camps, right? Like, either you seems to be that there's not a lot of middle ground on Ricky. But the numbers are what's going to make this interesting. And I think actually the thought that I have is, can Ricky be a leading man on a playoff contender when he's in the 39th percentile in pick and roll play? He's in the 30th percentile in spot up. He's in the 10th percentile in transition. He's in 23rd percentile in isolation. I mean, that's his overall offense ranks him in the 22nd percentile of all offensive players on points per possession. I don't know. It's a good question of whether all his other positives outweigh that enough for him to do exactly what he said. He also said the trade rumors affected him, but he pretty much said that with us. The interesting one that's taking place here in all these conversations is obviously the Mike Conley possibilities are being discussed. The other one that I think is worth keeping an eye on is Goran Dragic has a contract that he has to decide whether he's going to exercise or not. Is he going to opt into his $19 million? And there's two areas of impact on Goran Dragic opting into the $19 million. One is, if he opts into the $19 million, are you at all interested in trading for Goran Dragic at $19 million instead of Mike Conley for 1 year, instead of Mike Conley at $30-plus million for 2 years? Now, Dragic last year had a pretty tough year. I think he played 36 games. He was 28 minutes. He averaged 14 points, and he was in the 32nd percentile offensively. I mean, that was, you know, the only thing he did well is in limited isolation he was good. And he's old. You've got to figure out whether you think he's just, you know, where his body is. He and Quinn actually have a relationship from somewhere. I don't remember where. But, you know, that's a possibility. Now, a year prior, he played 75 games. He was middle of the pack offensively, pretty darn good pick and roll ball handler, great spot up shooter, super in isolation, great one-on-one player. He's pretty solid, right? His catch and shoot game was excellent. 84th percentile. And, you know, he's not as good off the bounce. But that's, you know, the 30-plus-year-old Mike Conley or the 30-plus-year-old Goran Dragic, one at 30-something million, the other at 19. The other thing that happens is if Goran Dragic opts out and wants to become a free agent, are you interested in him at a lower number and being able to possibly do, you know, something in that regard. The other thing it does is it opens up Miami as a Mike Conley destination. So keep an, you know, that's a team that has a bunch of little pieces and probably is would try to pull something off. I believe the age difference is that Conley will be 32 upon the start of the season, and Dragic will be 33. I'm not sure how big a deal. Conley, obviously, a much higher thought of player and athlete in his career than Dragic, but both of them have been very good at different points in times. But the price tag is either, you know, 30 plus for two or 19 for one, or you're signing Dragic maybe for a number, but then you're figuring out how many years you want to be giving him coming off 36 games. It's tricky. The Conley one's tricky. I mean, you're trading, basically you're giving up Rubio and Favors for Conley, and then you've got to figure out what you're doing at that power forward position in the rest of your roster is not the easiest equation in the whole world either. What is it fair to expect out of your draft pick? We'll do that when we continue. Today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Chevy. It's June. It might be time for the trucks and your family, and there's nobody, you know, there's nobody like Murdoch who's doing that. Murdoch Chevy has their amazing lineup of trucks. Murdoch Chevy located in Woods Cross, also up in Logan on Main Street. The Murdoch family's 90-plus years with Utah, doing amazing, amazing things. The Memorial Day sale was extended through June 3rd for you, and lots of exciting things taking place for Murdoch Chevy. Now you move into this. The Blazer is amazing. Go check it out. I drove the Equinox and loved it, and we all know about the Silverado as well as the Colorado, the amazing truck lineup that takes place at Murdoch Chevy. Murdoch Chevy, located in Woods Cross as well as in Logan. Say hi to Tyson when he's out there and see what he's got going on. He's at the Woods Cross store. All sorts of great truck lineups. The SUV lineup, just superb. So check it out. It's all out at Murdoch Chevy in Woods Cross and in Logan. Thanks as well as sponsorship of today's show by Hotels.com. Don't hate like your friends' trips. Go visit Hotel.com when you book your next trip. All right, Draft Express did a really interesting piece. I've always kind of loved this. They broke the draft into every single pick and what is a fair expectation of what you're going to get out of that pick. Now, I the one thing they do it, and they did it beautifully, is they do it by pick, and I think that there's, you can actually do a little bit more if you take longer. But so for the 23rd pick, they looked at this. The average 23rd pick in the NBA draft averages 8 points, 3 rebounds, and 2 assists. 8 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists. I kind of love that. And what that just tells you is you're not, like, for all of our stats breakdown we did the last few weeks, you're not shooting the moon. 20%, 19% of the 23rd picks don't play in the NBA. Okay, listen to this. We'll start at 20. Here's the percentage of on the pick that ends up not being rotation starting at the 20th pick of the draft. 43% for 20. 39% for 21. 22, for whatever weird reason, is 58%. 23 is 42%. 24 is 49%. 25 is 54%. I mean, if we just take that 5-pick range and average that out, you know, there's a really high likelihood. And this is where sometimes I think the Tobias Harris discussion, when people are talking about, I can't believe they gave up 2 first-round picks for Tobias Harris on a rental. Like, yeah, if you're going to be good, these lower-level picks are just not all that. it's kind of a myth. You take 21 through 25 in the draft. And I don't know how this, you know, what you're supposed to do about this, frankly. In the sense that you, like, does this change? 46.4% of picks around the Jazz pick are end of bench or don't out of the NBA or didn't play in the NBA. Didn't play. We're not getting, you're not getting an all-star. You know, what the chance of getting an all-star in these picks is 7%, 7%, 5%, 4%, 5%, 0%. Chance of even getting a starter with these picks is 18% with 20, 28% with 21, 23% with 22. This is getting a starter. Of course, we think we're better than everyone else, but at picking, 22% with 23, 26% with 24, and 13% with 25. So again, if you take the picks surrounding the Jazz, and the chances are you've got a 22% chance of a starter and a 46% chance of a non-rotation player. And then obviously the, so when we're looking at these players and we're analyzing, you know, some of the numbers and what you're looking at, I see huge number flaws. I'm not shooting the moon. You know, Ty Jerome can really shoot it. Well, that might be the right answer. Right? He can really shoot it. I know what his NBA skill is, how he can play, what he can do. He can really shoot it. When we did our, you know, NBA draft pick analysis. When you, you know, these weird body-typed guys that Pascal and Admiral that showed up beautifully on our numbers and they don't seem like they really have a position in what they do, like maybe they just play. And if they play 13 minutes a night, that's good. I know, I can hear you. 13 minutes a night for my first round draft pick, that's all you're looking for? Yeah, maybe. But the guy with a serious flaw or without the game defined, I have a hard time believing that's going to work. Late picks are tough. 46% don't make the rotation, 23% become starters. Well, you can do, you know, so you can do the math on the rest of that if you haven't figured that out. It's then 31% become rotation players. Right? So you got a basically a 50-50 chance on this pick that they ever play any meaningful role on your roster. It's also why when you're trading draft picks, and everyone loses it that the Philadelphia 76ers traded two picks for Tobias Harris. They traded one, the chances are they traded one, maybe starter, maybe rotation player. And the other one doesn't pan out. Right? I mean, it's even to the Jazz on the Andre Iguodala deal. If you go back, the Jazz make this Andre Iguodala deal where they let the Warriors, they take Andres Biedrin's and Richard Jefferson's contracts so the Warriors could sign Andre Iguodala. And the time, it felt like the Jazz got this haul. Like, everyone went nuts. The Jazz got a haul. And rightfully so, Dennis got praised for setting the market on a creative deal, and that's what salary cap space is worth, and that's how you use it. And we got two first-round picks. And the deal, like, by the end, what we got was Rodney Hood and Tony Bradley. Rodney is pretty good, right? Like, for us to pay Andres Biedrins and Richard Jefferson and Brandon Rush in a year where we weren't really trying to win, it's the smart right move, and we got two picks, and we ended up kind of perfectly as these drafts work. We ended up with a whatever pick Rodney was in the 20s and Tony Bradley in the 20s. That's, you know, probably what the 76ers will get for Tobias. And we had no cost, so it's a really smart trade. But as the numbers show, we ended up with one rotation starter in Rodney Hood. So, I mean, and one, we'll see if Tony Bradley, what Tony ever happens with Tony Bradley. I don't think we know yet, but frankly, Dennis outperformed the average of what you can do with those picks with his picks. Like that's so Dennis actually made that trade, great, really smart trade, got those picks, outperformed what you could with the picks, and the answer is we got Rodney Hood. And that's a big deal to get a player like that and get that caliber player, but that's also then the next part of this is like, well, do they actually become your rotation player and your starter? I don't think you can get away with just trading all your draft picks all the time because you need those low-level players, but I go back and forth with a bunch of people on this. I'm not a big necessary believer in the second round draft pick in that Royce O'Neal, Joe Ingles, European players you can sign for longer contracts and get, to me, sometimes feel like a better choice in a lot of ways than going and taking second round draft picks. Now there's some line in the second round, we'll talk about that maybe coming up this week, using the Draft Express numbers. There's a moment in time where the draft picks really drop off the backside of the map. I think it's about 35, 36. And then you'll have, you know, limited chance of them, and you have a better chance of finding the European player that matches your style, what you do, and signing that player. This is Locked On Jazz today. Have a fabulous day. Hope you enjoy your Monday. We'll be back with you tomorrow. Hopefully you get a chance to look at some college talent this week and start evaluating players as well. Talk to you soon.